Mets are on their way back.
World champions for the 27th time.
Home plate for all things Major League Baseball. This is the Nosebleeds Podcast on WFUV Sports.
Welcome back to another edition of Nosebleeds, WFUV Sports' main podcast for all things Major League Baseball, Tri-State and beyond. I am Jack Warner, and I am incredibly excited to be here because the camaraderie is off the charts. I can feel it already. You know, I haven't even introduced my co-hosts yet, but I can tell you that just by the dialogue of us stepping in the room here, you know, before we even got on air to record this episode, you're in for a very good show today because I don't think we've had a more baseball-spirited show than this one. Nothing but respect to all of the other wonderful contributors to Nosebleeds who all have the utmost baseball knowledge and love and passion for the game, but you're about to listen to three idiots who currently still play the sport of baseball and are teammates while doing so because sitting alongside me and across from me, I have Max Spitzer and Barrett Spritzer, and all three of us are currently on the Fordham University club baseball team. So I don't know if I've ever been as excited for an episode of Nosebleeds than this one. We've wanted this crew for a while. I was able to pull some strings with Mr. Lou Orlando, and we got it done. So I got to ask you boys, you know, the amount of time that we spend on the field together, I got to imagine it's quite a beautiful scene to see it finally transitioning into the studio.
I mean, we've talked about it ever since Barrett and I joined WFUV. And the fact that we finally made it happen, I mean, I think the only next step is a one-on-one, but we'll get to that point.
Hopefully.
Eventually. But yeah, Barrett, are you happy? Are you happy to be here?
I'm ecstatic. I mean, how often do you have an All-American in the studio, huh?
How often is an All-American in studio? Max Spitzer, NCBA All-American pitcher.
I mean, Barrett said it, not me, so I'm gonna rock with it.
It's not like you haven't been telling everyone
about it. I tell everyone on the team. I mean, it's a way to get out of stretching and stuff like that.
Save some ladies for the rest of us, dude. Jeez, come on.
No promises.
My gosh.
Fourth best pitcher in the country. No biggie. Just behind Stanford, guys. It's all good.
Not a big deal.
Well, we're at a unique point in the season right now because, as the typical American sports fan usually does, we are about 2 weeks. Actually, we just started week two with last night's, you know, Bills delivering an absolute curb stomping to the Miami Dolphins on Thursday Night Football. We're now entering week two of the NFL season, which means the average American sports fan has already started to make their transition, if not already made the full transition, into the regular 4 month, 5 month span of screaming and face palming at their fantasy team, making the craziest parlays that you could ever imagine. And just overall degeneracy, which I think is so special about American football fandom. We are all a part of it. We all contribute to it. But at the same time, we cannot ignore the fact that there is some very important baseball being played right now in the major leagues. We're right under the 20-game mark remaining in the season. It is September 13th. And there's a lot of races that are continuing to tighten, especially in the National League, which seems to be a little tighter at the moment than the American League wildcard race, but both are still very important. You got teams trading off spots, you know, the number one spot in their respective divisions in the case of the Yankees and the Orioles. There's a lot going on. There's a lot to get into, but we also want to take a second at the end of the show and each kind of wet our beaks in letting the world know about each of our respective fandoms, teams, how they're doing. I'll give you a quick little, you know, debrief on the state of the Red Sox. Get ready. It's not going to be good if you're a Red Sox fan. Spitz will provide you with a nice little, you know, tapping into the Milwaukee Brewers, who have had a wonderful season this year and have high playoff hopes going into this season. And I mean, at the end of the season. And Barrett, really the same thing, reporting on his Houston trash can. I mean, Astros. Sorry, that joke never, ever gets old. But let's hop right into things. We're going to start in the tri-state. The New York Mets, who come off a big series victory against the Toronto Blue Jays. They take 2 out of 3 at the Rogers Center in Toronto. But I want to talk about the series clinching game, which was game 3 of the series and could be the dumbest baseball game I've ever watched. I was able to watch a good portion of it. And basically, to make a long story short, the Mets got no hit for 8 innings. You got all the alerts on ESPN, no hitter watch, no watch. The Mets are about to get no hit. And then in the 9th inning, Francisco Lindor breaks up the no-hitter with a home run. That's nice. He's had a great season this year. According to New Yorkers, he's the MVP. But it doesn't stop there. The Mets, after being no hit for 8 innings, put up a 6-spot in the 9th inning and win the game 6-2 and ultimately the series, which ends up being a huge victory because while the Blue Jays are not a team that is necessarily a threat, losing that series is you can't afford to lose series anymore at this point in the season for the Mets with how tight the wild card race is and how such a narrow margin they hold that third wild card spot. But I want to talk about this game 3 and unloading for 6 runs in the 9th inning with the backs against the wall, trying to avoid a no-hitter. I mean, what the hell was that?
I mean, you look at it too, like, their hitting has not been that great since the second half of the season. Their pitching definitely has pushed them towards where they are.
I mean, you look at their splits, they're
ranked 5 for pitching, and then for hitting, they're around 18th, I think. So having a game like this, going into the series that they're about to go into against the Phillies, I mean, what else could you ask for? That's huge for them. I mean, they're about to face the Phillies in a 3-gamer, and then they go on a little road trip, I believe. And then, or actually, I think they go back home and then face the Phillies for a 4-game series. I mean, beating a team when you're about to get no hit the way they did is just huge for momentum. Huge.
I mean, 8-2 in their last 10. This team is just on a roll. Like, you ask how do you put up 6 after getting no hit? I don't really know. That's usually the sign of a bad team just making things happen, but with this year's Mets team, it feels like they just have everything going right at the right time. I mean, 8-2 in their last 10 here down the stretch into September. They're now in sole possession of the third wild card spot. I mean, I think just a week ago, they were about week and a half ago, they were about 3 back, and now they have sole possession of it. The Braves are kind of stumbling out of the blocks here into September, and so, I mean, the Mets just got to keep this rolling, maybe try not to get no hit for another 8 straight innings, but with this offense, if Lindor isn't on, or if Winker doesn't, you know, get hot, or if Pete Alonso doesn't hit like 1 home run a month, then it just doesn't seem like anything's going to happen. So they just got to keep finding ways to string hits together, get the runs where they can, and the pitcher staff just has to stay hot.
And the other thing that was really nice to see in that game, that 6-2 victory to cap off the series against Toronto, was adding the extra insurance after Francisco Lindor's home run was Francisco Alvarez. So the Franciscos came to MASH in the 9th inning. And that's a huge, huge spot for Francisco Alvarez to hit a home run, because if you've been keeping up with the New York Mets, Alvarez has been cold as ice, like, recently, especially with how he came into the league with such a bang. We obviously know that he dealt with some injuries early in the season. When he came back, he had a bit of a hot streak where he comes out the gate swinging, no pun intended, and then very much cooled off. And it was on both sides of the ball. He wasn't hitting very well. And you were also seeing a lot of sloppy play behind the dish, which this was a guy who, you know, upon entry into the league, and it didn't take that long for him to gain this status, was already being talked about as one of the top catchers, not only in the National League, but in Major League Baseball, because he's so young. He's so energetic. He brings such a pop to the New York Mets. And you just saw such such uncharacteristically cold play, basically post All-Star break, maybe leading into the All-Star break. So for him to come through in a spot like that, sometimes in baseball, all it takes is one at bat. Sometimes all it takes is one reminder that you're there for a reason and that you can produce when your name is called. So to see him be the one, you know, winning that game in the way that they did is phenomenal no matter what way it happens. But the fact that it was him, of all people, who I think was in desperate need of a big pick-me-up spot like that, I mean, I you can't say enough about just that timing.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at the Mets too, they have been an up and down team all year. Like, they had the Grimace era, they had the Oh My God era, era.
What does Warner call the Grimace era? Warner, what do you call the Grimace era?
What do you mean?
Well, just that the month it happened in, the time it happened.
Oh, they were showing their pride. It was the Pride Month Mets.
We all know what Warner likes.
They have a lot of pride.
I mean, they found a way though. Every time they get cold really easily, and that's their issue is that it takes one of their players, like Barrett was saying, it takes one person not to be hitting a home run for the whole team to get cold. But I mean, they're getting hot at the right time, you know, and they're starting off this series against the Phillies. Friday the 13th, pretty spooky for them. But I don't know. I think the Mets have the best. If they can keep this rolling, they're going to look great for playoffs. If they barely squeak into playoffs, that's going to be an issue for them just because they ride the roller coaster. They go up and down, and that's how they win. That's how they play. Most teams can't do that. Most teams go up, down, up, and when they go back down, they go down for good. So I think the Mets, if they can stay hot right now, I mean, as long as they can be a couple games, at least 3 games, 2.5 games ahead of the Braves before they end up playing them second to last series, I think they're in a good spot. But they do have to play the Phillies.
One of their biggest issues, though, is the fact, and probably the biggest contributor to why they're so streaky, is just the fact that most of their better hitters, or just a lot of the guys in that lineup, are platoon guys, right? Like Jesse Winker can only hit one-handedness of pitchers, right? So he can get hot, and then he'll sit for a day because, you know, and then he's not hot anymore. Or if he's really struggling to hit, that's just going to compound because he doesn't have that ability to, you know, string multiple days in. Like, he's not going to play 7 games in a row, most likely. And so if he's cold, you know, that off day might help. But if he's hot, that off day might kill him. Or they might just compound on each other and he's sitting there on the bench, right? And they got a lot of guys who are just platoon hitters. And that's been kind of the Mets' MO over the last, you know, they're like, them and the Giants are big platoon split guys.
Right, right.
Big platoon split teams. And so that can contribute a lot to the streakiness, is just the inconsistency of playing time. So it's going to be a big task for them to stay hot, because if the bats aren't hot, it's not a team with good enough hitters where you can be cold and just rely on Francisco Lindor and others to get the hits when they need. Because as much as I love Francisco Lindor, he's not the best offensive piece on a championship roster.
Right. No, I would agree with that statement, but I do think that it comes this final stretch of the Mets season is going to come down. They are going to live and die by their everyday guys. Because you mentioned they're a very platoon-heavy team. That's a great point. And it's in multiple different positions. You don't see Harrison Bader every day. You don't see Jesse Winker every day. Obviously, there's catching platoons and on every team, because catching is a very exhausting position. Barry, you would know this. But you know, you see sometimes, especially with, as I mentioned earlier, Francisco Alvarez cooling off a little bit as of late, you see platooning between him and Luis Torrens. So what this is going to come down to is these guys that are, they're going to have to, you know, the guys that are in platoon play are, at this point, kind of specialized in platoon play. They know how it goes, and while you do have to deal with the ups and downs of coming in the blink of an eye for a pinch hit at bat or having 1 or 2 days in between starts, you know, they're used to that. They're acclimated to that. What it's going to come down to is the everyday guys on the Mets who have to be consistent contributors to this lineup in the offensive production. We've already seen a ton from Francisco Lindor, who really has had a fantastic season. Mark Vientos, who has proved so much this season, one of the best power-hitting third basemen in all of baseball. What it's going to come down to is Pete Alonso and Brandon Nimmo, because those are two household name Mets, two beloved fan favorite Mets, who, for lack of a better way to describe it, have underperformed this season and have disappointed this season. You know, Pete Alonso in a contract year. All sorts of different whisperings on what the, you know, negotiation on that contract was like, why they hadn't signed him yet, where there were talks about whether they were going to trade him at the deadline. And to be honest, he has not impressed in a contract year. He has had an uptick in home runs, which is good because he's a power hitter. That's the purpose that he serves. And he's, you know, especially post All-Star break, you've seen home runs in more frequency, which is good. He's playing his role. But the rest of the season has to come down to, because there's a couple guys on the Mets who really have not impressed this year, Alonso being one of them, and as I mentioned, the other one, Brandon Nimmo. So what it's going to come down to is the rest of the season is gone. There is nothing that you can do to bring back the rest of the season, perform better, whatever preconceived notions from your earlier play that carry into this point in the season, forget about it. This is going to be about who can carry this team to a playoff spot, because you have seen at multiple points in the season, I don't care how streaky this team is, they have gone toe-to-toe with some of the best teams in Major League Baseball, and they have done well. In fact, the Mets have been a weird team where it almost feels like their downfall has been playing down to opponents. I feel like the weirdest games that I've covered this summer for the Mets, the ugliest games, most of them have been against pretty lackluster opponents. Most of the high-caliber teams I've seen come to Citi Field, the Mets may not have won every game, but they put up a fight or won those games. But the biggest thing came down to playing down to weaker opponents. I saw them lose to the Rockies. I saw them lose to the Marlins. Like, I've seen ugly losses to bad teams, but they have proven that they can compete with the upper echelons of teams in Major League Baseball. They have proven that they are a playoff team, a wild card team, but a playoff team nevertheless. It's going to come down to, can they string it all together in this last final stretch of the season?
I mean, do you think the Mets just making a playoff spot is a win for them at this point in the season, especially where they started? Or you think it's still, like, the only good result is a World Series?
I think the thing is, coming into this season, they had kind of resigned themselves to more of a rebuild year, and they were thinking, and they were just like, Pete Alonso hopefully has a good year. We hopefully get Pete re-signed. But then, I mean, you see the stretch of the season. Preseason expectations don't really mean much once you get into the summer. And really, early season and summer expectations don't mean much once you get into August and September. And it's, what does the team look like right now? And as you've seen with the Phillies and Diamondbacks the last, 2 years, right? The hottest teams in August, September, and October are the teams that have World Series expectations. So it doesn't matter if you were maybe outside of the wild card race at the All-Star break and you sneak into an All-Star. If you're hot after the All-Star break, there's no reason you don't have World Series expectations. So while their expectations, you know, in July might have been, hey, let's just make a wild card and see what happens. At this point, you know, you're not just fighting to get in, right? You're fighting to make it all the way, and there's no reason they don't have World Series expectations.
I think the outlook on the significance of the playoffs and where this Mets team should finish or where they are looking to finish entirely depends on lens, because I think you're completely right, Barrett, that once you're in a playoff hunt, it's not about the participation trophy of potentially making the playoffs. It's about winning the World Series. And Barrett, not to strike a chord, the one I always think about with teams in this position is the 19 Nationals. There was no reason that team should have made the World Series if you're one of those people that makes mid-season judgments on where the season is to finish. Now, granted, I do think you put those teams head-to-head, that Nationals team and this Mets team, there's more stars on that Nationals team, and I think they would have the slight edge. But they were worse throughout the season than the Mets were, but they got freakishly hot on the back half and made an unbelievable comeback and won a World Series. But that's the team that I always use as my, you know, my scale, because if you're within that team's range, if that team could do it, any team can do it. But what I do think is important is, again, I go back to the lens in which you view this season. Last year was a fire sale. You let Verlander go. Scherzer's gone too. Tommy Pham, who I understand was more of a rental piece, but was the highest batting average in the order, traded him. Now, you had to generate some value. I get why they did it. My point being is, last year they rolled over and died because they knew where that season was headed, and they thought, I'd rather generate some value and invest in the future. That's what Steve Cohen's been doing, is investing in the future, investing in youth. And there's still wonderful talent for the Mets that hasn't even reached the big leagues yet. I think this is not a World Series team. I'm not counting out the possibility that they go on a run, because they have a spark. And like I said, they've performed well against the upper echelons of talent in the MLB. But what I will say is, the way that this season was not only viewed going in, but the way that this season started, I think making the playoffs, and I don't want to hand out participation trophies, but I think making the playoffs with this team is a huge success.
I mean, you're talking about making the playoffs too. the funniest thing is if they do make the playoffs, they will be playing the Brewers, which is the team they got swept by, my team.
In their 0-5 start to the season.
Yep. And then a team that they end the season playing in Milwaukee, and then they're going to have to possibly, if they get that final wild card spot, I don't even think they're going to go back to New York. I think they're just going to stay in Milwaukee because they're going to be playing a wild card series there. So, I mean, like you said, they can get hot. I mean, the Nationals, what did they do to get past their wild card? A little error by Grisham in the outfield.
Right.
Off Hader. They beat the Brewers. After that point, there was nothing stopping them, right? What happened with the D-backs last year, right? They got hot at the right time. Who did they beat? The Brewers. I mean, if they're set up in a great spot right now, because it looks like every team that beats the Brewers in the wild card ends up winning the entire thing. So, or at least going to the World Series. But, I mean, they just, like you said, they just got to get there. And it's the playoffs. It's baseball. Like, this isn't football where you have a team that's so substantially better than the other that they have no chance in the world of winning. That's why you have series in baseball, right? You have your best pitcher against their best pitcher. Maybe he doesn't have a good day. Maybe you have a wild walk-off home run when you should have not even been in the game. Maybe you're getting no hit to the last inning and then win 6-1. Like, it's playoff baseball and postseason baseball is one of the most exciting times because you really don't know. You really don't know, and it's a Mets team where no one really knew where they were going to be the entire year, and they've proven that they belong. It's just their time to show it.
Yeah, it's not, back to your point about how you were saying that if this Mets team went against that 19 Nationals team, that 19 Nationals team had more star power. I mean, that 19 Nationals team had more star power than any team ever. So,
right, no, 100%.
It doesn't matter that much in star power, and what I will say, especially in recent years, has attested this more than ever. It's not about what your Francisco Lindors do. It's about what your DJ Stewarts do, right? It's not about what Zach Gallen does. It's about what your Brandon Pfaadt does.
Right.
It's not about what Juan Soto does. It's about what Howie Kendrick does, right?
Right. Howie Kendrick went off at like age 40.
Yep. Your star players, just playing as star players, doesn't win you a World Series. It's your rotation guys. It's the guys who you didn't know maybe were going to make the postseason roster. It's the guy, if you know, he's been platooning all year and he gets hot at the right time and all of a sudden he's playing like an all-star. It's Jesse Winker hitting 900 in the postseason, 900 OPS in the postseason with a couple of home runs, right, that can carry a team. The postseason is so condensed, right? You play maybe 14 games to I think, right? You could get to the World Series on 14 games. Can someone fact check me on that?
You'd have to win 2 in the wild card.
If you swept everyone, right, that's 13 games to win the World Series. So, say you play 18 games to win a World Series, right? That's not that many games in the whole scheme of things. People plenty of times go on 18-game hitting streaks. Plenty of times have like a 1,400 OPS for a two-week stretch,
I just think they have such a hard path, though. I think they have the hardest path if they were to make the playoffs than any other team.
I think you can say that about anyone in the NL, though, right? Like, the NL is so competitive. Even with teams like the Dodgers and the Phillies, I just don't see a team that's like, oh my God, this team is so insane. Like, it's going to be a slugfest in the National League to see who gets out of there.
Yeah, right now, the NL wildcard picture is a lot more, it's actually more lopsided now than it was maybe a week or two ago, but that's only because there's now only one team really chomping at the bit outside the wild card, and it's the Braves. They're only a game back. The next closest is the Cubs at 5, but it used to be a lot quicker than that. I mean, closer than that. And now I think there's more question besides whether the Braves or the Mets will take that third spot. I think right now the bigger debate in the National League is the order of the wild card spots, because when you look within the wild card spots, you got the Diamondbacks holding wild card one. They have it by 2 games, I believe. And then you have, or I'm sorry, they're 2 games ahead of the,
I think the Braves is how they do that. I'm not sure how. I think it's 2 games ahead of the Braves.
Yeah, it's 2 games ahead of the Braves. And then the Padres are a game and a half ahead, but they're a game and a half ahead of the Mets. So it's a lot tighter in terms of the actual within the wild card defined teams. For me, it's just going to come down to the Mets having to play the most focused baseball that they've ever played. Because when you look at this end of the schedule, like we mentioned, three games set against the Phillies this weekend starting tonight at 6:40. Three games set against the Nationals, who are not a good team but are in division and see the Mets a lot. Like, that is a trap series if I've ever heard one. After that, Phillies again for another three games at Citi Field. Then three games directly against the Braves, which, as you mentioned, Max, depending on how they go into that, the lead and how many games they have is going to have a huge impact on how that series goes and kind of the margin for error that the Mets will have in that series. And then they finish with a three-game set against the Brewers, which it doesn't matter how the Brewers maybe don't have an impact on the Mets. It's all about the Mets can't lose on days when the Braves win. That's how this tight race is. And the Brewers are a phenomenal baseball team. So this is a gauntlet to end the season. But you have to embrace it at a certain point, because it also, if you can make that third wild card spot after this way to end the season, you're battle tested. I mean, that's the Phillies take out the Nationals, which I still said could have the potential to be a trap series. You got the Phillies, the Braves, and the Brewers, two of the best teams in the National League, and then the Braves, who you are currently dueling with for that last spot. This is a gauntlet. So this is a huge, huge, high leverage, insanely high leverage ending of this regular season for the New York Mets. But we're going to transition, because we've been yapping about the Mets for quite a bit.
26 minutes.
More good than I've ever yapped about the Mets. Lord. Well, we're not going to show the Yankees the same love for my reason. No, I'm just kidding. New York Yankees, let's go to the Bronx. Last night.
Already in the Bronx.
We're in the Bronx, but the talking point was in Queens. Learn your city geography, jackass. last night, the rivalry. Got my heart broken. Knew I was going to get my heart broken. The Yankees beat the Boston Red Sox 2-1 in 10 innings. Juan Soto, walk-off single. And there's a lot to be happy about with that game last night on the Yankees' half of things, because the bullpen absolutely shoved. You saw a drought from the fifth inning until the ninth inning when Nestor Cortez comes out of the game. Nestor Cortez, who pitched well, I think had eight or nine strikeouts. Only pitch he wanted back was a home run that he surrenders to Danny Jansen to tie the game. Solo shot. Finally, Danny Jansen does something. As soon as he comes out of the game, the Yankees bullpen holds the Red Sox to not a single hit until the ninth inning. And even after that hit in the ninth inning, they strand the runners. I believe it was Tommy Kahnle. Yes, it was Tommy Kahnle, who strands two runners on base for the Red Sox. And the Yankees pull out a gutsy win. But at this, so we're talking about how good the Yankees are right now. Top of the AL East. Really a big postseason ahead of them. But the bats have gone kind of cold, man. You're not seeing the same booming offensive prowess that you saw at earlier points in the season. Now, baseball's a long season, it's a hard game. But that, like, last night, they left, I believe it was 9 runners on base throughout that game. Not really hitting in high leverage situations. You had a home run from Gleyber Torres, a leadoff home run from Gleyber Torres, which was big for them. But the Yankees are an interesting team, man, because you really do see them look like the greatest team God's ever assembled at certain points in the season. And then there's certain games where you really have to ask yourself, does this team have World Series aspirations?
I mean, it's the New York Yankees. There's always that question, because their expectation, regardless of who they have, is a World Series, right? The thing is, yeah, like you were saying, pitchers did great last night for the Yankees, that's what they've been needing. Like, they have been struggling the second half of the season, and being able to come in and get that win on the back of the pitchers is unbelievable. However, you never really talk about how they're, like, no one ever really talks about how their offense is maybe slipping a little. I mean, they're doing fine. They beat the Royals a couple games ago, like 10-0. But that's the biggest worry, and I think that's where you've always seen the Yankees fall in the postseason, is with their hitting kind of getting a little cold. I mean, they had Jazz, who came in. He did a great job energizing the team. But, I mean, they're not the Mets, right? They're not a momentum team. They are a skill team, right? Like, they play it very traditionally. They have the players who are getting paid to win and should win. But what I think the Yankees are missing is that extra little spark because of the way their team is set up and the expectations they have. And, you know, they make a big deal of the captain, which I really love, but it adds that traditionalist baseball feel. Well, the Mets on the other side are the new era, right? And I think the Yankees could use a little bit of a new era just to get hot right before the postseason because they're making it. But I don't know. I think they're better than the Astros, but I think I don't know. I think I'm just kind of going on a little riff here, but I like the Yankees. They're two games ahead right now, but I don't think they're going to go that far.
Yeah, I don't like him at all. Judge is not having a good. He has no home runs in his last 16. He's slugging in his last 15. He has an OPS under 600 or just at about 600. He has struggled. This is a team that if Judge is not hitting, the team will not succeed because as they've been so they added Soto, but they're still so reliant on Judge. And so if Judge isn't playing, he's not doing well. Something else I just read as I pulled up his baseball reference page. His nickname is Baj. Has anyone heard that
Judge's
before?
His nickname is Baj.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thought it was the judge. I thought it was the cider, the ruler of all.
El Capitan. Baj. Where does Baj come from? Can we get a little history lesson on Baj?
That's not.
He's a Mets guy. It's not his thing.
That's not my team.
He's a Red Sox guy, dude.
Well, I mean, he's a beat reporter for the Mets, so he kind of. He focused on
all right. Back
history.
To baseball. That's enough out of you.
He said it's a college nickname.
Interesting. Who knows what they do out there in California? He went to Fresno State. Yep. Who knows what they do out there in California? Anyways, if Judge is not hitting, this team will not succeed. He went on Paw Patrol, hit a home run, hasn't hit a home run since.
Jesus Christ.
It's been a little rough. What do you expect? I mean, hanging out with Chase, the German Shepherd. That guy is an op. He sucks the soul out of anyone, you know. There's just no fight left in you after he commits his war crimes. Juan Soto, on the other hand, has been very good, but your stars have to play like stars in September. I think that's something I've already said on this podcast, and that's just because it is so important that your best players play like your best players. And especially for this Yankees team, when you got guys like Glaber, who's just been a bowl of toilet water this year.
Oh my God.
You got Jazz, who has been very inconsistent. Everyone else is on that team is either old or bad. Like Verdugo is bad. The team is not good outside of the top two guys.
I like the Jason Dominguez call up though. I think
that guy's a stud.
He needs some. I think a slower start than he was probably anticipating, but sometimes that takes time. I do think that you are seeing more positives than Barrett's letting on.
Nope.
Currently about the Yankees.
No
because
positives.
You got Heal back and you got Clark Schmidt back, and they're both dealing. Clark Schmidt had a great outing against the Cubs in his first outing back. Not to mention, this was an interesting thing that I pulled from a New York Post article that I found very interesting, and it does, speak volumes to the development of the Yankees farm system recently in the way that they've built up the team in the last few years. Six of the Yankees' top seven players, so basically all of them but Soto, in the baseball reference wins above replacement. Aaron Judge, who that's to be expected. That's not really what I'm focusing on. Luis Heal, Austin Wells, Anthony Volpe, Clark Schmidt, and Nestor Cortez. Most of which are homegrown Yankees. Mm-hmm. You really are seeing the project that was, building from their farm system upward kind of manifesting itself at this point in the season. But another person who I really want to specifically shine a light on is Austin Wells, who has been absolutely raking as of recent and is continuing to maintain himself as one of the best catchers in baseball, not just in the American League, in baseball. Dark horse AL Rookie of the Year. I don't know if he'll actually win it.
I don't think it should even be dark horse at this point. I will say there is maybe a little bit more light on this team than I was saying, because Austin Wells is a stud. That mustache, majestic.
Beautiful.
I've been on him since the first time I've seen that mustache, but I think it's not even Because outside of maybe Colton Cowser, who else do you give it to?
I wasn't really going based off my own take. I was more going off like what you said. Like, I was looking at more betting odds. Not that that's always the safest litmus test, but I meant dark.
It's always the safest.
Yeah, I always meant dark horse in terms of betting odds. But Colton Cowser is the runaway favorite right now. I'm not plugging my own team. There are cases to be made for Willier Abreu and Seydon Rafaela. I'm not saying they're going to win it, nor at this point do I think they should. Seydon Rafaela has gone completely cold. Willier Abreu hasn't gone necessarily as cold as Rafaela has, but is not nearly, he's not producing nearly at the consistency that he was earlier in the season.
You're welcome for him, by the way.
Yeah, I know. but I think right now, I like Austin Wells for AL MVP. Rookie of the year.
Judge, wouldn't mind giving him to that either.
Judge is AL MVP. But I'm not trying to take any shine away from Colton Cowser, who's been absolutely phenomenal and has done such big things for the Orioles this season. But the production that you're getting on both sides of the ball from Austin Wells, who's been a good defensive catcher, has been honestly an upgrade from Jose Trevino. I'm not trying to bash him because I do know he took a bit of a leave of absence from an injury, so I'm not trying to, harp too heavily on him, but you really got to see Austin Wells shine a little bit more, which was, I guess, a positive for Austin Wells, who's, again, been a very consistent hitter in an inconsistent lineup that can be very inconsistent. The Red Sox, who are one of the most embarrassing pitching staffs I've seen in the MLB, holds the Yankees to one run last night. Now every lineup has an off night, but the amount of runners left on base, it wasn't like the Yankees weren't causing base traffic. They had 9 runners left on base. They loaded the bases at one point in the game and left them stranded. They didn't have situational hitting last night. But I think this season is going to come down to, can all of the right pieces click at the right time for the Yankees? That's what I think is going to be the key, because you are seeing, not on a night-in, night-out basis, but you're seeing on enough of a night-in basis, this team can hit. This team has woken up since the All-Star break. In fact, more so since the trade deadline. That's really when the initial turn took. Once Jazz came to the Yankees, they take that series at Fenway and then immediately go into Philly and dog-walk the Phillies in their own barn. You really started to get a sense that, okay, the Yankees are really coming back into their regular selves. But as of recent, you've seen the bats cool off a little bit, except for when they beat the Royals 10-0 the other day. It's kind of similar to the Mets in that finally the pitching has found its stride, which was something that was kind of up in the air, especially during that rough stretch in the middle of the year, like I said, pre-trade deadline. So for me, for the Yankees, the rest of the season, whether they come out on that one seed in the AL East or whether it comes down to the Orioles, is going to be, can they all click at the right time?
Well, another thing is this whole battle between the Orioles and the Yankees has actually given the Guardians a chance. They're only like a game behind the Yankees, which is wild to think about, because, I mean, the Astros, they're going to be that third place. They're going to be that third seed because, they're not very good this year. But
all right, you need to shut your mouth over there, boy.
The Astros scare the hell out of me. I don't care what anyone says. Postseason Astros scares the hell out of me.
Not this year. But the Guardians have creeped up a little bit. So, I mean, not only do they need to outlast the Orioles, but they need to outlast the Guardians as well, which is going to be probably a little more difficult than they initially thought going into August. But, I mean, what else are they going to do? They don't have an option. They're the New York Yankees. It's first or nothing for them.
Yeah, I do want to just come back to one of the points you said, Warner, and that the pitching is finally turning around. And I think a big part of that is just that they're healthy, right? You have guys like Luis Gil, who's throwing career high in innings. And so just having all of the starters finally healthy and able to give guys blows here and there, able to give guys a rest, able to have guys go on the IL if they need and not have to pitch through injury because everyone else is injured. And so the more you can limit your young guys throwing as many innings as possible, the better, right? Nestor moved to the bullpen for a couple games. He started last night, looked really good. But just that ability to move guys around within that rotation and have the ability to have guys go on extended rest if they need is so huge for the consistency and just keeping arms fresh, especially going down the stretch here into October, which is something you've seen with the Astros, able to go into a 6-man rotation as well.
Just looking at the final stretch of the season for the Yankees, They got three more games against the Red Sox today, tomorrow, and Sunday, which, being completely analytical about my own team, there's no reason the Yankees shouldn't win this series. They should take three at the least. They could sweep. They could sweep a four-gamer against the Red Sox if they really wanted to. That's where the Red Sox are at this point. But after that, three-game set against the Mariners in Seattle.
They should sweep that one, too.
Three-game set against the Athletics in Oakland.
That.
But remember, though, that's a West Coast road trip. Like, that is tiring for a baseball team. So, three-game set in Seattle, three-game set in Oakland, then a three-game set in the Bronx against the Orioles, which is going to be huge. I will probably be at one of those games. And then they finish the season with a three-game set at home against the Pirates. So outside of the fact that there's a six-game West Coast road trip and a pivotal three-game series against the Orioles in the Bronx, if you're looking at the rest of this season, I think it's the Yankees to lose. Like, it really is. That is a final stretch that is wildly in the Yankees' favor. I don't find the Red Sox to be a threat. I don't find the Mariners to be a threat. And I certainly don't find the A's to be a threat, even though they've been playing better baseball as of late.
And just like always, they beat the Astros down the stretch whenever they need. Don't sleep on the A's because
they've been playing much better baseball.
They also just clinched their first less than 100 loss season in the last 3 years.
Which is
they
wonderful.
They will not lose 100 games this year.
Which is good for them.
Love that for them. They got a lot of young guys actually playing very well. Lawrence Butler is a stud.
He's sick.
He's very good. They just have like a surprisingly well-developed farm system that's finally coming up. So I would not sleep on the A's. West Coast road trip. I would maybe not be shocked if that Mariner series is actually significantly easier than that A's series.
I wouldn't be surprised either.
Not very good.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised, but Randy Arozarena probably hates the Yankees. He may try to tap in. I'm just kidding.
Well, it's a good little break for the pitching staff to have to go against that Mariners offense for a little bit. So,
yeah.
I mean, you could probably throw Clark Schmidt for 37 straight innings if you needed to and let everyone else rest.
Yep. Any other thoughts, questions, and concerns about this team that I hate so very much?
Clay Holmes is a bit of a concern. We haven't talked on him
He lost his closer spot. He did come in the 10th last night and shut it down, especially with starting with the ghost runner rule on second. But Canley started the inning, got the first out, and then Holmes came in and shut it down. But I think I really do think this number one spot in the AL East is the Yankees to lose at this point. So
I would agree with that.
We're going to transition. We're going to quickly shoot through three teams, very randomly chosen, not randomly chosen at all. We're going to try to get out of here soon because Spitz and I have class.
We do have class.
We have class because we're studious young men. But I'm just going to make this really quick. I was going to talk about it more, but honestly, there's really not that much to talk about. The Red Sox just started playing meaningful baseball in a random series against the Orioles. For what reason, I don't know. That meaningful baseball would have been really nice 4 weeks ago when they started this downward turn. Rafi's been cold as ice. They should probably just deactivate him at this point. I'm just kidding. They're not going to do that, but they say there's still a fight to be made. They're not even the number one team outside the wild card right now. Even the Tigers, who, not to dump on the Tigers, because they've actually been really
dump on the Tigers.
They've been really nah, I used to live in Detroit. I'm not going to dump on the Tigers. But the Tigers have jumped them. They're 3.5 out of the wild card three, and the Red Sox are 4.5 out of wild card three with like 2 weeks to go. So don't know what happened. Honestly, I do know what happened. The pitching is horrific, whatever negative pejorative you want to use to describe the Red Sox pitching situation, you are correct. Honestly, this is making me more upset the more that I talk about the Red Sox right now. Rafael has gone cold. Really was talking a lot of smack about him potentially being an AL Rookie of the Year. Probably not going to happen. Spitz, can we just talk about the Brewers, man?
The Brewers are fantastic. The Brewers are doing amazing this year. And you know why? You want to know why? It's because of one man, and that's Pat Murphy right there. I mean, I would say a decent, solid friend of mine. And, I mean, they're a young team. You know what I mean? Like, they're a really young team. A lot of great rookies on that team. Ortiz, the best Jackson in baseball, as Jackson Chirio. Jackson Holiday. I mean, come on, dude.
What about Jackson Merrill?
No. Chirio is one of the future faces of baseball.
No, he is. You're he is.
Here. But, I mean, it's because, I mean, he's Murph spent most of his time in college, right? One of the most decorated and successful coaches at ASU. Notre Dame is where he started. That's he actually coached Council in Notre Dame. By the way, shout out to Council for having a terrible season his first year in Chicago, as he should. I mean, it's only fitting. It's only fitting.
There's no bias in any of these discussions.
There's no bias at all, dude. Council is a great coach. Unless you take away a great team from him, and you know you hand him the Cubs, he sucks. So,
wow, I do want to quickly just pivot back to Jackson Jorio. Lots of 20s.
Yeah,
he's 20 years old.
2020,
and he secured a 20 homer, 20 stolen base season, which is so
under the radar.
So
too.
Under the radar.
Under the radar. I mean,
because the Brewers don't get enough love. Like,
talked about the Brewers until a week ago.
No, I know. No one. The Brewers do not get nearly enough love for how amazing of a season they're having.
With Christian Yelich going down, they didn't stop. You know what
no,
I mean?
No, which that's when the most press about the Brewers was going on, because it was Yelich goes down, this team's back is broken. No, it's not.
No.
It sucks.
It was supposed to be a rebuilding year, too. Literally, I mean, you look at, there's this video deep in the Instagram of the Milwaukee Brewers, probably like 200 posts under Sexy Red throwing out the first pitch. But
why it didn't happen?
It didn't happen. I don't know. That was ridiculous.
That's really upsetting.
Snoop Dogg threw out the first pitch.
Yeah, that would have been sick. But I would have loved to have seen Sexy Red throw out a first pitch.
Especially in Wisconsin, of all places.
No, I know, that's just like such a random place for her to throw out a first pitch.
We had Snoop Dogg in the summer, and he commentated a little bit. If we make the World Series, he's going to be throwing out a first pitch in the World Series. He was promised. So, I mean,
that would be electric.
That's the one reason, I think. I mean, yeah, of course, winning a World Series first in the organization's history would be great. But Snoop Dogg throwing out a first pitch in Milwaukee? Who would have thought?
But
who would have thunk it?
But as Max referred to him, the best Jackson in baseball, which is up for debate, but there's definitely a good debate to be made for Jackson Jorio. First player in MLB history with a 2020 season aged 20 or younger, which is absolutely phenomenal and makes me feel terrible about myself. I'm 21, so I'm starting to get to that age where what am I doing with my life? Because I'm seeing these guys ball out, and I'm like,
you see it all the time in soccer, and it's like, oh, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, those guys are in Europe. They do things different. But then you see a guy in the U.S. who's younger than you playing in the MLB and dominating. You're like, oh.
I can barely hit, you know, Montclair State's fourth starter in club baseball, and this 20-year-old is...
We don't even play four
State.
Games. So where's the fourth starter coming
Sorry,
from?
Sorry, third starter. That's how out of touch I am. Good Lord. I need to get a job. I really do. I need to touch grass. I need to go outside.
Just
fill
grounding.
Out a W-2.
That's what I do now. Just, you know, a little
fill out a W-2.
Barrett,
I'm not
everything's gonna... bigger in Texas, even their morons. No, I'm kidding. Houston Astros, talk to me.
I'm not going to take too much of your time up, but all I do want to say is that rough start to the season. The Yankees swept us at home. We looked terrible.
Awful.
Since the worst player in baseball, the worst player in the history of baseball, the worst Cuban first baseman in the history of baseball,
horrific,
has been DFA'd. The Astros have been the best team in baseball, or second
debatable.
Best team. I mean, statistically, it is not. Statistically, it is not debatable.
Baseball is not just statistics, though.
It almost literally is.
Nah, we're all told at one point we can no longer play the children's game.
That has nothing. Hey, I didn't talk during your segment.
Max, you need to chill. The playoff Astros is completely different.
Let
from
me
whatever
spew
you
my bias. I didn't interrupt your bias. Let me spew my bias. Let me get on my soapbox here. I do want to just say one more thing on Jose Abreu before I get into this year's actual team.
I'm sure
this
will be polite.
It's just, what did you expect when you went from one washed, allegedly 36-year-old Cuban first baseman to another washed, allegedly 36-year-old Cuban first baseman? I mean, what are we doing here? This is terrible. Just absolutely disgusting behavior. Jeff Bagwell should have never been given any reins, any say in that front office.
Oh my God!
Yeah, I mean, we didn't have a GM for like 3 months in the summer. What? The owner and Jeff Bagwell and his friends were running the baseball club. Nothing was going well. Every single signing, they signed Rafael Montero to the biggest reliever contract ever. They signed Jose Abreu just to DFA him 8 months later. What were they thinking? That was horrible. That was horrible. darkest stretch in Astros baseball history.
Jeff Bagwell, great hitter.
Hey, by the way, just some boys having a good summer. That's what that sounds like.
Just some boys
a great summer,
trying to ruin an investment.
Team.
Baseball right. and beers, man.
All right. But what I will say is this last couple months of the Astros have been absolutely incredible. This team, a lot of people are sleeping on them because of the bad start. They're not going to win 90 games. They're going to come into the playoffs as an underdog in a lot of people's minds. But the thing is, they're not. If you look at the betting odds, which Max loves, they're actually not that big of an underdog. I think they have the third best odds to win the World Series, and there's a reason for that. It's guys like Hunter Brown, who's having, since May, he's got about a 2.6 ERA. He's striking people out. He's absolutely just shutting people down. He's giving you, you know, six runs, a two-run ball almost every time he goes out there. He's been incredible. He's living up to his baby Verlander hype. Spencer Arrighetti, who was so horrible, probably the worst starter in baseball for about the first awesome. 2.5 months of the season, has been absolutely electric. He's still prone to a blow-up start every now and then, but he's been lights out. Justin Verlander, please get him off my team. I love you, man.
Oh, my God.
You've been so great, but you cannot be pitching to a 5 ERA
dog
and expect
water.
To pitch.
Guilty.
We're
dog
paying
water.
You too much to have a 5 ERA and expect to pitch in the playoffs.
Who
Ben
was
Verlander,
it?
Shut up, dude. Stop talking. I don't care if you're allegedly an Astros fan because of your brother. Your brother is not good enough in this day and age to start.
Who did he surrender 7 RBIs to with a grand slam and a 3-run homer the other day? It was I should know that. Hold on. I got to find it.
Yeah, I just tune out the Verlander starts and chalk him up as a loss. And I'll go back and look at the box scores after. I refuse to watch those because it is so bad. I love Verlander. He's probably my second favorite Astro ever just because of what he's been able to do. And I think he's arguably the best pitcher in Astros history just because of how much we've won since he's come. But, man, he cannot start a game in the playoffs for us. It's been so bad.
Dog water. Just
on the other hand, another guy who started really bad but has been much better now is Alex Bregman. I will be the first guy to tell you that I was ready to DFA him along with Jose Abreu.
DFA right? Alex Bregman?
I don't care if he's
Once
in a
again,
contract
no loyalty.
Year. I don't care if he's in a contract year. The dude was hitting to a 480 OPS for 2 months. That can't happen. But he's back. He's been absolutely electric. He's got the OPS over 760. He's been huge as we've been dealing with injuries. Speaking of injuries, the last thing I will say about this Astros team is, have you ever heard of a bruise keeping someone out for 3 months? Anyone? Anyone ever heard of a bruise keeping someone out for 3 months?
Maybe a bone bruise.
Yeah. Kyle Tucker took a foul ball to the shin. And was out for 3 months with a bruise.
At one point.
For 3 months.
I mean, it depends on the severity of the bruise. I don't know. Like, I have
I
no
mean,
idea.
It could be like they call it a bruise, but it's like a borderline fracture.
Pavin Smith. That's who it was.
Pavin Smith, yep.
He had a 3-run homer and a grand slam in the first and second inning, or first and third inning. It was his first two at bats off Justin Verlander.
That'll about sum up his season. All I do want to say, we'll end this Astros segment, and because I know these New Yorkers do not want to hear about the Astros because they know that they're going to get the doors beat in when they play the Astros in the postseason. Here is that this is not the same team that you played in March. This is not the same team that people saw in April. This is not the same team that people even saw in May. This is a completely different team. This is a team reminiscent of that 2021 team, that 2022 team. Teams that, you know, maybe aren't going to have the offensive firepower, but they're going to dogfight you. The pitching staff's going to be elite. And Josh Hader has been much better.
New York still fears the Astros.
They
like, should. I know, no, like I do think that is the consensus because of just like the very rugged history with playing against them in the playoffs. I've talked to Lou a couple times, who is an avid Yankee fan. He's been like, we just got to prepare. He's specifically mentioned the Astros before, and like the postseason outlook being like, we got to prepare for the Astros if that is one of the routes that ends up we're being led to. But that'll wrap up the brainless spew of all of our favorite teams. One last thing before we go, and this is a debut segment. It's Brick Talk, boys. It's Brick Talk. Even though we can't locate the Fordham University Club Baseball rally brick at this moment, it's pretty depressing. Joe Henry just walked by the studio.
Snake.
Absolute corrupt.
Disgusting.
Person. Changed his NFL Friday pick. He's on trial right now.
He should be.
Come here. We are currently on air, and Joe, make sure you shut that door. Joe Henry just walked in. We're talking about your treason, even though we're talking about baseball. He's currently on trial. we'll see. There's arguments to be made for both sides. He did make a pick to his favorite team, the Patriots, but it was after kickoff, allegedly. I'm just saying allegedly. I'm not picking
guilty
sides.
Guilty until proven innocent.
So he's about to go on trial on NFL Friday in a few minutes. It's greatly anticipated. Eli Keeler coming off sabbatical. Going to be a big deal. But what's up, dude? Just say hello to the people at home.
Yeah, it's been a whirlwind week. Get a taste of, the cruelty of our justice system. I think this week has taught me a lot about what to not take for granted about the country that I live in, and the government which allows us to live in this country. Because I think we can all agree, at least to some extent, that the things that have happened this week have been not reflective of a pure, good-hearted American democracy.
Oh my goodness! Okay, hey,
I mean,
big accusations.
I'm taking
there.
Law and framework, so I got you. Don't worry about it. If you need someone, it's pretty expensive.
In all seriousness, before we get back into baseball talk, do you need any help? You good?
Oh, I'm representing myself. Don't even worry about it.
Okay, beautiful, beautiful.
Well, I mean,
well, best of luck
good,
to you.
Because I've only read two chapters and I don't know anything.
I hope you're not given life in prison. But if you are, it's been a good run.
It was probably deserved if you are, because I know those guys and they are very fair judges. They don't look malicious at all.
We'll see what happens. But go Pats. I appreciate the corruption. At least it was towards a good cause. Alleged corruption. Alleged corruption. Alleged.
Always got to use alleged.
Thank you for popping in, Joe.
He's so guilty. Now that he's gone, he's guilty.
Anyway,
all accounts.
Club baseball. First ever Fordham University club baseball segment on Nosebleeds. Just took in a brand new freshman class. Very pitcher heavy. Couple of good outfielders, one of which is a two-way, also pitches. So very pitcher-heavy class. I just want to ask you guys about the outlook heading into the season, a new conference that makes no sense. It never makes sense. They always realign our conference, and clearly the people that make the conferences have never read a map before, because a lot of times they just don't make sense.
No, they make everyone else close, just not us.
Honestly, I think we've analyzed enough baseball today. I want to talk about initiating the new class tonight, which we're using the word initiation.
We're orientating them.
It's orientation without giving away too many things. What can we expect from orientation tonight?
I do just want to say we had a pretty inaccurate traffic report this morning.
Very inaccurate traffic report.
I mean, how do you send out a traffic report at 1 a.m. and then expect that to still be true at 8 a.m.
when
I got to get
to
class?
Interviewed some people, too. Never seen that on a traffic report.
For the listeners at home, every year when the club baseball team adds the new class of kids, the week before their initiation, they are given assignments. Sometimes it's items that they have to bring to initiation. Sometimes it is a weather report, which they have to record themselves giving a weather report for the entire team so they know how to dress for the next day of classes. And there's a traffic report, which one of our new members of the team gave a traffic report last night at 12:30 a.m. like that would be helpful to any of us. And I was walking to class today, traffic everywhere. Because the report was given at midnight. I'm
you
not going to class
seriously
at midnight.
Injured.
I could have been seriously injured.
Caleb was almost hit by a couple police officers.
Yeah, you never know what's happening on Fordham Road. It's anything could happen on Fordham Road.
I mean, really, I mean, as the manager too, the future manager after this great night that we're about to have, he can't make mistakes like that.
Questionable decision making from him.
You just can't. And then he had a little sass this morning.
I know,
too.
He had some sass towards Barrett.
And I was like,
Barrett,
yo, dude, not
chat.
The day.
He
I know it's Friday chill. The 13th. Maybe he's a little spooked. Everyone's a little spooked on Friday the 13th. But there was a lot of sass.
But an eventful evening.
Can I just say one more thing?
Yes.
Since I know absolutely none of them will listen to this, because they haven't been.
Who knows, though?
They haven't been indoctrinated in FUV yet. I think the thing I'm most excited for is that prosciutto wheel when that shows up. That prosciutto.
Yes.
And then that Parmesan wheel.
Well, you got to give a little more insight.
Okay, so we do, they have their assignments, but then, things get thrown at them. I think things that are being brought are a wheel of Parmesan, prosciutto.
A full wheel?
I believe that's what
that
was requested.
It was an offer. It wasn't a requirement. It was more like, hey, me and
oh, it was the prosciutto di Parma, right?
Me and Cassie
someone wanted like a...
Yeah, yeah, we were talking.
Like authentic,
like, hey,
imported.
Oh, that's not,
like,
that's
hey,
definitely
we,
not happening.
Yeah. And I don't know if that's going to happen. But what are they, a pound of what?
A pound of prosciutto, I believe.
Yeah, a pound of prosciutto from either Calabria Pork Store, I think was where they said to get it,
and
which is the best pork store in the Bronx.
Those will run you some numbers.
Yeah, a pound of pound of prosciutto from Calabria, that's going to make a dent in the wall. I will respect.
And he doesn't even get to eat it.
That's the other thing. The items provided, it's for the greater good of the squad. It is not for the people who provide the items. But basically, long story short, tonight, club baseball initiation, where we will make the new class officially members of the Fordham University club baseball team. We're going to stash some, we'll welcome them to a house, send them off on their merry way in baseball pants and wife beaters. Wife pleasers. Sorry, that's actually the wrong term to use. You're right. Tank tops. To then go collect jerseys that we hid around the baseball field. They will then have to come back to a different location, and on the way, they have to stop and purchase a Crave case from White Castle, which that might get purchased and not touched. I'm not saying I'm above.
I don't think I'm above White Castle.
I will not touch that.
I'm not snobby, but
gross.
I don't know if it's socially acceptable to eat White Castle anymore.
I mean, it's
that's
too early in the night to do that.
Yeah.
And they have to do all of this without use of their handheld
devices.
Global positioning systems.
Yes. And
GPS.
Along with fun competitions that will result in rewards and loser punishments. It should be fun. It'll be a lot of good, safe fun. We want to welcome the guys into the team, and we're definitely looking forward to it. But that's going to wrap up this episode of Nosebleeds. I had a great time with you two. This was a crew that I've been waiting for a while, and we had a great time doing it. The most baseball show to ever happen on Nosebleeds. FUCB hijacked Nosebleeds. Spread the word. Signing off for Max Spitzer and Barrett Spritzer, who also did double duty on the boards today. I'm Jack Warner saying so long. Keep in touch with all things baseball, because we got a very, very important month ahead. And tune back in with us next week.